UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merge 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And it is such. Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty. Four calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome to the show, everyone. I hope you're all doing okay. Tonight's guest is Chris from California, and Chris has experienced strange events since he was a child, seeing people and feelings of being watched, which led to all sorts of anxieties. Chris is going to be sharing a few of those experiences tonight.
If you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Hello, Chris, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Nick.
Thank you for coming on today. Calling from California.
Yes, Long Beach, California.
That's great, Chris. Okay, you're going to be sharing some of your paranormal experiences. Would you like to start at the very beginning, please, Chris?
Yes. So it actually, you know, I found out not even about 6 years ago, I had problems with addiction. And this leads up with my story. It's very important, I feel, with all the encounters and everything that I've actually seen and witnessed, and not only had people that were around me in these events that kind of proved, gave me some evidence of what I've seen was actually real. Because this first encounter that I actually, which really made the gears start really running and trying to find answers of what's really going on. What did I see? And am I going crazy? I just couldn't accept the fact that I actually saw what I saw. You know, that kind of confuses people. They think, you know, if you saw something, with your own two eyes, how can you not believe it? But it really did catch me off guard. It was of a blink of an eye moment. And I know that sounds too fast to really spot out exactly what I saw, but it would almost be like if you were just looking, you know, if you're looking at your phone, you look up and you see someone look back down at your phone within that time, you kind of have an idea of what you just saw when you looked up. But that's the best way I can describe this first encounter that really changed my life entirely. And but how this all correlates is in the beginning of how I found this out later, that this has been going on in my life since I was very young. I was going to these doctors. My teachers were complaining about my attention disorder. I was getting bad grades. School was very hard for me. I paint and I draw. I'm a mural artist today. So I kind of kept always drawing in class. And that was always my thing I loved doing, but that really affected my school. So how that this all runs together is they wanted me to get on some type of medication to help me do better. And why I think this has a big importance with the paranormal is that I feel like I've talked to many people, and just through the days of my addiction and experiencing other drugs, and which I'm not promoting to do. It's horrible. It ruined my life. I didn't even know I was addicted until I got in high school. I was kind of born into this. Ever since I can remember, I was always taking some sort of medication and not knowing it's a very strong narcotic. Why this is such a big deal is because what I was seeing in the backyard, I was always to myself, pretty independent. I had an older brother into sports. I like playing sports, but I always loved playing in the backyard. And, I always had activities to do, but I'd see things as I'd play. And I kind of recalled these moments. There's one moment that I really recall. I was filling up an area in my backyard full of water. And my mom, she's loved gardening. She's all about gardening. So she used to get really mad when I, mess up her flowers with over watering her flowers and stuff. So I just remember this one time overflowing this area of this flower bed that she had in the backyard where I play my toys, and hearing my name and this voice telling me that you're going to get in trouble, like warning me that I shouldn't be doing this. And it's weird because reading these notes that these doctors on these one-on-one meetings they would have when they were trying to diagnose me with some type of attention disorder, because they can see that my testing was pretty bad. And so they were actually saying, you know what, your son seems to have a really strong imagination. We think that because he has this, had the diagnostics of calling what I had, the ring of fire. It's a ring that in brain scans, it's around your brain. They say this, if a person has what's called the ring of fire, they're easily distracted. So any movement or shadows will distract them, and they'll look towards that, that area. And that could fool them to being in person or something that's there that's not there. And so they were just kind of telling my parents that this is just my imagination. And we can tell that he's just by his stories, he gets his focus is just, I used to just daydream, but really I remember being always aware of what was going on. I even remember talking to these doctors and, not wanting to be there. And just, I remember not liking these medications, and I felt like things were getting worse in my life. And I, ironically, as I look at these notes with these one-on-one doctors, they pretty much prescribed me ADHD through these details that I was telling these doctors about what I was seeing, what I was hearing, and prescribed me medication. I feel like I was misdiagnosed possibly, and it just made things a lot worse. And I felt like in high school, and we're jumping now to in high school, I started having this habit of feeling this deep depression, feeling something wasn't right. I knew I always had this fear of the dark, fear of being watched. I always thought that was the anxiety through whatever these doctors are telling me, I have. They're saying I have ADHD that has, you'll have paranoia, anxiety. They were just pretty much telling me that everything is in your mind. Everything. If I were to go tell a doctor I'm seeing someone, shadow that's in my room, they just would say it's my imagination, which was really frustrating because I know it wasn't. It was very real. And, ironically, through taking drugs, in my life, I would lie so much. And that really caught up to me, because when these events started happening, it was very hard for people to believe me. So when evidence that started coming up with the encounters that I've witnessed with people surrounding me as this happened multiple times, it really made me feel good. And I was so thankful that this was the case, because I knew from just being unconfident about myself, being on these prescription drugs, going into brain scans when you're 7, 8 years old, it really traumatizes you, because you don't understand. I remember asking my friends, do you trying to hint if they do that too? And of course not. No one ever told me. So I always thought something was really wrong with me. And I just couldn't figure it out, because I always felt pretty good about myself. I knew stuff was happening around me. And what happened, I think, sadly, they thought what I call a special ability is a disability. So seeing what I have been seeing and witnessing stopped entering my mind in such a way where I was so out of it, on just so depressed on these medications, and got into the deep end with getting into some pretty hard stuff, and was having, as I look back now, I remember having events happen, but thinking, you know, I was probably just having a bad trip, or it was just all in my mind. And once I got off everything is when this all started on July 4th of 2016. I was in a detox facility, and it was my third weekend. And I remember everybody was outside in the backyard. We were having a barbecue, and it was the staff having a barbecue. There was about six patients at that time. This day sticks out, is burnt into my brain. I mean, finding out what I found out later, it made me question everything that I've ever been told in my life, like how this world works. I just feel like the miscommunication of people not talking about their experiences is leaving this gap, making people so confused and thinking something's wrong with them when really this is happening and this is a real thing. But to get back to the story, it was July 4th. I was trying to stop smoking cigarettes, so I got new vape I was really excited about. So I had the kitchen to myself, which you usually don't have at a detox. It's very hard to get a spot by yourself for a little bit. So I was feeling good, and I'm setting up, reading this pamphlet. In the corner of my eye, I just felt the sense to look up because I felt eyes. And as I looked up, there was an apron hanging on a cabinet. And between the apron and this cabinet was a door that would lead out to the garage, to the side yard. You're not supposed to be back in this area, by the way, because this is only staff. It's the washer and dryer room where I saw what was an arm, but it was the top part of a forearm that went to the top part of the back of someone's hand. And what's interesting about it, as I countless times of thinking like how strange it was that the way the arm was facing, it was facing as if the muscle of the forearm was facing in within your body. So meaning that if that was a person, it would be impossible for me not to be able to see the full upper part of his torso and shoulders, and literally like as if someone was standing in the middle of the doorway, but it was just the right arm, and that was visible for a flash, and it was gone. And it kind of felt like someone was peeking around the corner. It was that fast. And I thought, it, you know, right away, someone's messing with me. And I knew not to go back. We're not supposed to go back there, but I had to check. I run back there. Of course, nothing's there. And what's really crazy and caught me off guard about it too was right away how this arm was positioned. When you walk into this doorway, on the left hand side of this door, behind it, behind the door, is there's only a couple inches and it hits the wall. So it would be impossible for any, because the door slants and then you got that little space behind there. It was unbelievable. I just couldn't believe. When I saw the arm and I looked in the room and I realized what just happened, I was so in disbelief. And I remember there was a girl there. She was smoking a cigarette out front, but she had this stylish hat on, a big stylish hat on. She's smoking a cigarette. It wasn't her. She had long sleeves on. This arm had, it was just like a solid arm. It looked very similar to mine in terms of the portions, like the, you know, I kind of have skinny arms. So, you know, I was ruling out reflections of my arm. I was trying to just figure out everything. And I asked her, I said, did anybody walk by, you know, did anybody just come walk by here? And I didn't tell her right away because I was like afraid to. I kept hesitating because I was like, wait a second, what the heck is going on? And, finally, she kept asking, why are you, wait, just tell me what happened. Why do you keep asking me if I was in the washer room? And then I asked her, I go, well, you're not going to believe me, but I just saw an arm in the washer dryer room. And once I looked up, it was gone and no one's around and all the staff's in the backyard. But she asked a question right there that I didn't even think about right off the bat. And she said, did the arm have any tattoos? And literally everyone at the detox facility had full on sleeve arm tattoos on both arms or some sort of tattoo that almost filled up the forearm. That just ruled out everybody. everybody in the house, it was ruled out. And so it gets crazy when I find out why that is such a big detail to the owner of the detox. Once I asked her, she said, did the arm have any tattoos? She goes, it's probably a staffer, you know, messing around with you. I go, no, you don't understand. It was so fast. And I had to tell the staff. I go, I got it. She goes, yeah, tell them. But I'm telling everybody, and everybody obviously doesn't believe what happened. But interesting enough, one of the main employees that's been there since they've been open in 2000, I want to say it was 2013 when they opened, later out found out that a staff employee had experiences that he was kind of keeping hidden. It's a detox. My stepbrother used to work at the detox that I went to. So I kind of knew the staff member, you know, they knew my stepbrother really well. And so they kind of right away had a different type of communication between all me and the staff. It was more friendly, and because I knew my stepbrother. So when this happened, I knew that I could sit in the office and talk to this guy, Matt, who's been there. He was just a really, you know, had a good vibe to him. I knew I can trust him. And I told him the story, and I said, Matt, I am freaked out. I really am. I'm freaked out. And they thought I was using this as an excuse to get out of the detox and go back and relapse. It really wasn't. And this actually kept me sober. Right now, I'm going almost on 5 years sober. So I've been over 4 years sober now to that day. And when I left the detox, I ended up leaving early because I was that freaked out. And when I left, they said, okay, we'll see you back. They said only, you know, 5% can leave detox early without going into a rehab and finishing the program. And I didn't ever finish the program. I didn't have to. And what happened, though, of why this was such a big dramatic time of my life is that when I told Matt the night of 4th of July of what happened, every detail about what I saw that day of 4th of July. So the owner of the house of the detox was talking to Matt, and Matt got me. He sat me down. He said, listen, Chris, you have to stay here one more night, because I wanted to get out of the house. I was out of there. I wanted to get out, man. It was unbelievable. What happened after I saw the arm, the whole atmosphere changed. I was just completely thrown off. I kept walking around the house, seeing if I would see anything else. And, you know, nothing that was happening. And I'm sitting there going, I know I saw it. I know it. And it was 4th of July. It was a holiday. So I told one of the staffs, I said, hey, can I call one of my family members to just say happy 4th of July? But really, I was lying. I was calling my family member because they had to come pick me up. I had no vehicle. I was far away, this detox from where I live. Called, I got in the backyard, and they actually are supposed to stand there with you and listen to your conversation. But since it's 4th of July, everybody was in the backyard having a good time. They kind of gave me some slack. So I had the chance to say what was going on. Told my mom, you know, my mom was just like, what? Like, she just, you know, she didn't believe it right away. And she just was going, you're overthinking. But it was so real to me. And I knew I wanted to get out of there. I knew I was going to get out of there. I was literally about to walk, which my house is over 100 miles. I was doing whatever I could. What happened later through the night, it was so frustrating. You know, since it was a holiday, a lot of the staff went home early. And there was only one staff member who was staying that night up on 4th of July, who wasn't there all day. He was the night shift. So I had to retell my whole story if I was going to tell this guy. He would have had no idea what was going on. I'm sitting there, and I just wanted to talk to the main person of the house that owns the detox. I wanted to talk to her because Matt, like I said, pulled me in the office, said, you have to stay here one more night because the head member of the detox needs to tell you something you need to hear. And, but of course it was 4th of July. She was with her family. So she came that morning after. So I had to wait one full night in this place. It just traumatized me. This event that took place and me seeing this arm and me thinking of this all through the night. And, it was very weird what happened because I had a friend who was my roommate. We had roommates, and he was a big reason why I was sticking with the program. We were playing the guitar together. We always would talk, joke around. So it just made detox easier. And that night of when I told him what happened, he was the only guy that really was helped me out discussing and, you know, going, you know, kind of calmed me down. But what happened was, later that night, he was at the detox a lot longer than he should have been. And he was supposed to be leaving soon to a rehab. But what happened on 4th of July, he just couldn't stop thinking about his girlfriend. And he actually walked out of the detox and was telling me, can you cover for me? If they check the room, can you like put pillows or whatever? He was asking me to cover for him and try to put pillows under his blanket. I said, John, you can do that. You know, he ends up doing that. And why that is, why I'm saying this is because I knew he shouldn't have done that. I knew I was telling him, I go, you're going to get kicked out of here. Everything's going to be a waste. And he left. And he says, when I come back, I'm going to knock on the window. You got to let me in. So I said, okay, I'll let you in. So that was the plan. And before you know it, they come in at 1 a.m., search the room. They knew he was, obviously, he left the detox and took off. But what was strange about that is I was still waiting for him. I knew he was going to come back and try to come through the window because he didn't have his phone. They take your phone. So he literally just walked to his girlfriend's house. So I'm knowing that John is going to eventually probably knock on the window throughout the night. I'm not sure when. And I fell asleep. It was very hard to fall asleep that night, but I did. And when I fell asleep, I had a dream that really scared me. I woke up to three knocks. And when I woke up out of this dream, I asked myself, I go, is that, you know, I had to ask myself, was that the door? But then I'm thinking, maybe that's John, you know, coming back. So, but it didn't sound like it was at the window. It sounded like it was at the door. And this is 3:30 a.m. And the reason why I know that, there was a TV clock right underneath the TV as you're walking towards this door that I thought I heard the knocks at. And I opened the door, and this hallway stretches about 12 feet. I mean, there's no way. The amount of time that I got out of my bed to walk and open the door and look down the hallway, someone would have had a, it was just so fast. I would have saw someone turn the corner. I would have heard footsteps or running. There was four rooms down that hallway. I was the last room down the hallway. So I was, you know, I kind of had the whole angle of the hallway down my view, and all the doors are shut. And I know no one's going to do that. There's just I didn't know at the time what all that meant. Three knocks. When I started looking into all this stuff, that's when I started hearing people's stories. And it was really cool because I started connecting different people's stories with mine. And I felt like this is why I'm on your show. I love your show. And I felt like this is a great opportunity to share mine because it might help others like it helped me hearing your show. And, you know, I apologize if I sound a little nervous. I just, this is a very hard thing to talk about. For some reason, it hits me. It hits me in a way I can't really describe it. Because afterwards, what happened after all this, the dream, seeing the arm, it ends up being where I wake up that night so scared of this dream that I had of like these creatures attacking me. And it was just, they were dogpiling on me. They finally caught up with me. I remember trying to bite my way out, and it almost felt like styrofoam. It was like no effect. I just can remember biting into this creature's hand as it was gripping onto me and ripping its hand. And it felt like I just took a bite out of a styrofoam cup. It was the weirdest. It's just so real. I just remember being just absolutely terrified and waking up out of that, actually feeling like I just came out of that situation in real life. It was that I was just drenched with sweat, and I never been. I mean, I've woken up sweaty and had bad dreams before then, but this was like the real deal night terror. Like, and now I understand what people talk about when they have real night terrors. I mean, it really. I mean, I was so sweaty that I was cold. I mean, this is in the middle of summer, you know, in California, and I was freezing, and you can't just take a shower in the middle of the night. So I had to sit there and look it in the window. And but I was just so freaked out. I'm sitting there. It wasn't John. No one was at the door that knocked that I woke up. And I knew I'm sitting there asking, I'm questioning my sanity, looking at the wall. I could just remember hearing the freeway overpass, just cars just flying that night, and just thinking, I was just in a daze, just going, what is going on? Because that dream, I've had bad dreams beforehand, obviously, but this was just, it just felt, it was like intentional. I felt like this house was very, it was just eating me up. And finally, the sun started coming up. I just remember going, okay, she's going to be here, you know, at 8 a.m. Matt promised me she was going to be there at 8 a.m. She did. She came. She got me in the office and we sat there and I was hesitating because I came to my, I started thinking about it. I'm going, wait, I'm at a detox facility. If I talk about seeing something, seeing half an arm in a doorway, they're going to put me in a halfway house. You know, I thought they were actually going to think I had some type of mental illness, so or put me somewhere. And just having that fear of what I've had when I was younger, being misdiagnosed. I mean, my whole life is, I feel like I'm so misunderstood. And I feel like society underestimates the truth and reality behind these encounters, the supernatural and UFO encounters. But to continue on, she comes into the office and I tell her my story. Eventually she gets me comfortable enough to where I can trust her. And the reason how she actually got me comfortable, she says, Chris, if you saw something, because what I know Matt told her, they're not supposed to tell, because I remember when I first tell Matt, the staff member of that night, I said, you promised it, so you got to trust me. And he just said, yeah, everything you say in this office is confidential. So you could tell me anything and don't worry. You're not going to, you know, we're not going to think you're crazy. And ironically, he has some stories himself through the years that I found out later of that morning when I told the head manager of the house that I saw an arm. She looked me in the eyes and she said, what time did you see the arm? And I couldn't really remember. I remember it was like around 4. I just remember going, why? You know, like, why was she asking that? So July 4th, 4 years prior, she had a boyfriend that had addiction problems himself. And this is the main cause of why she actually made that detox facility and started this business to help people with drug addictions. But she had a boyfriend that lived in this house, that detox facility I was at, that very house 4 years prior, who died committing suicide. She's told me that the police documented him to die at 3:30 p.m. So that was why she asked me that, because she knew it was during that time. And I still don't know. If it was, that would have been very, you know, that wouldn't have surprised me, because there's a lot of other things that add up that are just as fascinating. But so she said that her boyfriend died and committed suicide. And so we're this location. I saw the arm as I told her, and we walked together and I told her, I said, please tell me that these cameras record and they work. And this, I honestly feel like this is the most frustrating part. The one camera in the house that didn't work was in the kitchen. I was so mad. Now, I always ask my stepbrother, I said, is that true? Is she just telling me that? You know, like, why was she telling me that, though? Why would she lie? Because she was actually telling me, don't say anything, but that camera doesn't work. And they have cameras around the house, and they just make sure everybody's, you know, following the rules and not doing anything suspicious. But so the camera, I thought right away, you know, as I looked up, I didn't even see it, too. I almost forgot that detail of that of the story, is that there was this camera literally above me. And I was like, if it doesn't capture what I saw, you'll see my reaction. And I knew, I was thinking that was going to be good enough, my reaction. Of course, it wouldn't be, dying for any type of evidence to prove what I just went through. So what happened was when she told me that her boyfriend committed suicide July 4th, 4 years prior to this detox being open, as he lived in that house, that room I saw the arm was his office space. So before it was a detox facility, it was his office space. This was like a full-on room, which they changed it into a washer, dryer, and then a bathroom. It was a pretty big house, so they had about 4 bathrooms. And so that's what they added on to that. So that was a room at one time, and it was his office. So that made it that hit me hard. And as soon as she told me that, I started crying. She actually asked me, why are you crying? Are you crying because you're sad about the story? Or are you crying because, the best way to explain it would be like going through a breakup. You're trying to hold in a cry and you get that feeling in your chest and it just, no matter how hard you try, it's going to come through and you just start tearing. That's what it felt like. And I just felt this chill, a presence, almost like he was, to this day, I feel like he connected, somehow followed me. And I know that sounds crazy, but, and it was very scary because ever since that day that we had the meeting and she told me, there's been multiple events that's happened in this house that including that her ex-boyfriend who died, she said that there was a patient in the beginning years of the detox that was there that was caught in the act. I just want to know if I would have heard this story that I'm about to say, I would, you know, beforehand, before anything I saw or witnessed, I would have laughed at it. It would have been, you know, I would have not, you know, I wouldn't have taken it seriously. But knowing what I just witnessed and after hearing this, this really, really scared me. She said that this patient was caught in the act doing the whole ritual salt, doing speaking in tongues under sitting under a table in the pitch darkness. And one of the staff members happened to run across that. And so they caught her doing that and they didn't even know what to do with her because they didn't know, like, you know, what the heck is going on. But they actually ended up kicking her out of the house. And she was saying these events of all the cabinets being open. It was a blood moon night. And she said that she'll never forget that. And all the cabinets were open. So there was these events that were happening through the night, she said, but no one's ever seen anything. The man that committed suicide, his name is Jeff. And she told me that that she thought I saw her ex-boyfriend, Jeff, and that she said that I think he's trying to help you. And what I found out later, interesting enough, is that I truly believe that the paranormal kind of, they feed off energy. And a detox facility, you got so much, you know, your emotions are running high. I mean, 24 hours, people are thinking of committing suicide. One of the girls tried hanging herself there, you know, the second week in. And so there's just this high and low, which I find is like a perfect location for the paranormal. I feel like they feed off that. My third week in, I was in pretty good spirits. They were calling me the pink cloud, which is a term they use in a detox where it's like a newbie who comes in a detox and thinks he knows and figures everything out and he's going to fix his problem. And so they were just saying, you're too happy or, they just couldn't accept the fact that I was actually dealing with it pretty well at the whole time. So there was no experience that was leading up to it. It just invaded my life. I mean, it came into my life that quick, but lasted.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
There's not a day I don't go by and think about this because it correlates with so many things down the line that the events that followed up with this. And what I really want to make clear is that I hear stories about ghosts. People say they see spirits and people say they see UFOs and all types of stuff. And I feel like they all kind of have, you know, they're very similar and they have some type of connection. The reason why I say that, it's because after finding out all this information about the house and the history of it and the fact that a man died on the same day of when, you know, I experienced this, it made me look into my life and start questioning about everything. I started, my mom thankfully kept all these notes from the doctors, and it's just there's these notes that are amazing to read because it's in real time. I'm sitting there talking to these doctors as a young kid and telling them what I'm seeing. So I knew, okay, so this has been going on for a long time. And somehow I just was so numb to this noticing events around me, being on drugs and being depressed. And I never really focusing on myself, and everything was just a blur. I remember my drug days, and until I got sober, these things started coming again. And I feel like, you know, a lot of people like to say, you know, when they get high, they see the paranormal. But I actually think I could be wrong about this, but I think it could be the opposite, that you're actually almost like calcifying this ability to be able to see if you have this, which I feel like everybody does have this ability to see this, the spirit realm. And the spirit realm is connected to the UFO. After I started finding out everything about the house, as I came home, my mom, I left the detox early. My mom picked me up. We got back to the house. It was about three nights in a row where I couldn't sleep without the lights on. And, you know, I'm not even afraid to admit this. I had to sleep in the same room with my mom. I couldn't even sleep by myself. I was so haunted to the fact that maybe it might have followed me. And just remember being so happy that I was home. And once this started, you know, day by day, I just started thinking about what was going on. Certain little things started happening that started making me realize that presence that I was feeling in the house, like I was in my own house that I live in Long Beach right now, that sometimes I, to this very day, still have little experiences here and there. But now I take it in a lot better than when this all first started happening. It's still scary. There's still things, you know, I've talked to many people about and try to get some type of solution of how to keep calm during situations. Noticing that I was going through sleep paralysis a lot after my return home from the detox. And I never used to get that. The one time that really sticks out to me is I had this episode where my eyes were open. I just remember feeling like there was something just right in front of me, but I couldn't see it. It just was this feeling that it was there. And it just took over throughout my whole body. It's just full on chills and I was frozen. And I remember just doing everything I can to get my body and just move my arm or leg or anything just to snap out of it. And you just feel this like compression on your chest that you just feel like you're sinking into your bed. And when that happened and I snapped out of it, I remember feeling so relieved that I was going, I not want to go to sleep right away again after that. I was sitting there going, What if you got stuck like that forever? Like, what if you couldn't move? And what if I just became paralyzed? Like, it was very scary. It felt like a very long time. I'm sure it was very fast, but I was just frozen in time. I couldn't yell out to anybody. It was the harder I try, it was just making it harder to get my voice to speak up. So when I started getting the sleep paralysis episodes, I was sitting there going, what the heck? You know, I started looking it up on Google and seeing other people. And then everybody who has these type of situations that happen, what they call sleep paralysis, where your body is still asleep, but your brain is awake. So that's how you go through these. You know, some people have these events that happen to them and they can, you know, it'd be really scary. But what happened was everybody's details on their stories is identical to what I was experiencing. You have this feeling of there's being something there, and it's this dark mass. It's like, it's weird because I didn't see a figure, but I know like a black mass to it. I don't, and I know that doesn't make sense because I didn't see it, but I can feel that it did. And so I was going, okay, something following me back to from that detox. I started going and meeting with mediums and trying to ask them certain ways how to you know, fix this problem. And I feel like I'm cursed. I feel like people getting these nightmares and getting where I can't. I'm paralyzed in my sleep. And some of these mediums really made it worse for me. They were saying that spirits connected to me and that I had a guy do tarot cards. And I found out later, you're not supposed to do any of this. That I found out later, it's not a good idea. Or if you do it, that you're supposed to do it with someone who knows exactly what they're doing. Otherwise, you're playing with fire. And I found that out later. What I'm basically getting to and how this gets into the UFO encounters is that dreams, I feel like, are underestimated. And this has a connection with the paranormal, with the spirit realm. I feel like what I witnessed through the dreams, they have to have some type of connection. And the reason why I think that is because all this bad scary stuff was happening. And I just kept questioning, is this my own mind or is this happening? But knowing that I had evidence to prove that a paranormal event that actually took place in my life that has proven to me that happened, that's the way how the guy died on the same day. But like, if I would have never heard that story, if I would have never heard that someone died on 4th of July, I still would have known I saw the arm. So, but that just made it easier for me to accept that I saw an arm that wasn't supposed to be there. So with these dreams, I feel like why that there's a connection between the two with all the bad things that happened. I was having two dreams. I started going into what is called a lucid dream. And these are dreams that you acknowledge that you're in a dream. And the first, I remember having these dreams that, you know, the first few times and having absolutely no control and remembering to try to get out. I remember being very terrified and trying to get out. But there was two times that just happened this past year that really, really stick out that were almost like it was paused. You know, months later, it just, this dream continued. So there was like two parts of the dream that were separated. And so that this dream was so strange to me. I had this lucid dream of me going, I end up being in this mountain that was burrowed like a donut. It looked like, that's the best way I can describe it. It was like a donut, had forest within it that was really thick forest that just surrounded the whole area of this circle that within this huge mountain. It had this huge waterfall with what looked like a hotel, very big. When I was in this location, I knew this location and I knew, understanding that, I knew I was in a dream. This dream was I just met a group of friends that they were asking me, why are you here? It's been a long time. It was almost, and it felt so real. You know, later waking up out of that, I really felt like it was overwhelming. It felt so real. It really felt like I just got back from meeting longtime friends, which is really interesting. And when I woke out of this dream, I had this dream twice. And the second time, it was the exact same thing that played out. But this time, at the end, my grandma, who has passed away in 2006, was very close to me. It was like I had a view of seeing me outside the dream being pulled out, and my grandma gave me this gift in the dream of this cologne bottle I've worn. It's a special reason why I wear it. It reminds me of my dad. I've always worn it. It's a very distinctive thing, something I always get and I take pride in. In this dream, she gives me this cologne. I just remember seeing this light behind her and her smiling, and that was it. And I woke up. And I was living with my mom and at the time, and I woke her up. I right away, I said, Mom, I just had a dream, because it was her mother. And I told her about the dream. This is in the middle of the night. My mom, you know, usually she just, because I do this so much, she's probably so tired of me. It's my whole life I've been going through these experiences. But later on, she started witnessing things too. So it all worked out in the end. Things started happening in front of her. As I go into my mom's room and tell her this dream that I had of my grandma giving me this gift, it was near my birthday at the time. And we were going through some financial problems. Crazy that you actually said that, that she gave you that. And she thought I saw her gift. She just couldn't believe I had that dream. She's like, you saw the gift I got you. And I said, what? No, I really didn't. And so she didn't have that much money, but she was able to get me that cologne, and it was in a light blue bag. So in the dream that I had that, my grandma just gives that to me, and my mom tells me that. As she says this, there was a shelf above me that was right. She has a desk right below, and this shelf has milk glass and candles, and my mom likes a bunch of antiques and stuff. There's a bunch of stuff on shelves and pictures, and as soon as she tells me that she bought me the Dolce & Gabbana, my heart froze. I got chills all over my body. And this shelf came off the wall. And when the shelf came off the wall, somehow when it came off the wall, all the pitchers and milk glass slid off into a hamper. Nothing broke. And on the bottom of where the shelf was a desk, my picture and my brother's picture frames of us as a little kid that were on the left and right of the desk. And this shelf, It had to have been more than 5 pounds. And these picture frames are like a feather. They're so light. They're big, but they're light. And this shelf is resting on me and my brother's pictures. And as I look, because we turned the lights on, because we thought everything broke. Everything's in a hamper. Everything's okay. And the shelf's resting on me and my brother's picture and my grandma and my grandpa's picture that was on the shelf. It flipped off the top of the shelf and landed in the middle of the desk perfectly. I know for people who are skeptics, they just won't be able to believe this stuff. I know this sounds, the reason why I took the courage, and I want to thank you again for giving me this, you know, this opportunity to say the story, is that I feel like a lot of people do go through this, and it's very real. People are afraid to speak out. That causes depression. And so I love this show just for that reason. I knew this is the perfect, you know, platform to maybe I might be able to help a kid who's younger, who's dealing with events such what I went through. Parents are trying to get him on medications because they think he has some type of disability, or he's, when really I feel like I hope my story does is make you think twice before you make a move and really search within yourself before you take other people's opinions on what's wrong with you and what's going on. And I felt like that I never did that until I got older and really started focusing that, you know, I'm not crazy. This stuff happens. There's, so with all that, 2018, it was late at night, and this kind of tops off everything. It was late after hours, and my brother comes home and he was looking for a lighter. And I had a bedroom at the time that was set up right in the front of the house, so I can hear anybody come up to the doorway. And my brother came home late, wakes me up to get one of my lighters. And I remember just being mad, getting woken up. And it's in my car. So I throw on my keys. He's running back. All of a sudden, I can hear him running back. And I knew he was going to run back to me and ask me for something else because I wanted to sleep. And my brother goes, Chris, you got to come in here. You got to look at this. And my brother is, he's just one of those guys, very skeptical. And he ran up to me and said, you got to see this. So when my brother says that, I know something's definitely going on that can't be normal. So I remember going out to my front of the house, and this isn't Long Beach, California. As I'm looking, it would be north from my house. So I was seeing, and it was this green. It looked like a Frisbee that if you were to look at it, not the full circle, but just that thin line of a Frisbee. It was a turquoise green, it was like a lime green. It was like a very, very lime green. It would go, it'd be solid, and then it would go out, and then you'd see it, it'd be solid again, like it would be doing rings. Huge light. And I remember my mom was a school teacher, and it was a school night for her, and we knew not to wake up my mom on a school night, but we had to show her. And so my mom saw it, my brother saw it. So I thought that was just, you know, a really crazy deal. I live by an airport. So I know there's planes that fly around. The Long Beach Airport is literally 2 miles away from my area. So it's like, I know there's airplanes. I know I'm familiar with the helicopters that come over. But as I said, I was a mural artist. So sometimes I work really late at night. I have to do graveyard and paint businesses in the late hours. So I had the room and space without people crowding all around. And when sometimes I'm outside and I'll be on scaffolding and I just, you know, listen to music, paint, and I'll just have, it's just a perfect chance. It's just kind of, you can look up at the sky. There's a very relaxing job. So there's never anything I saw, but I just remember going home one night. This just happened before this whole pandemic hit. It was around 5:45. The sun was just coming up, and I was on the toll road, and I'm coming, and as I'm coming down this hill, a green light comes right through the clouds, just shoots really quick, and it was gone, and it was right on the hill, and I'm sitting there, and I started asking myself, you know, when people see these type of sightings, a coincidence, that I feel like these are for a reason, that they're making themselves known to you, whether people don't acknowledge or see something at that time when it happened. I feel like when people do see something, they're not doing that by accident. And I started noticing this more and more of seeing these sightings. And it got to the point, as crazy as it sounds, my bedroom now, I got a window so I can lay on my bed and look straight to the left of me. There's a window out. And there's been countless nights this past year that there has been these objects that would fly in my window space. And I don't know to this day, but it kind of makes me think that I don't know if this is just a, like I said, it's a coincidence. Frustrating. And I, even when I try to explain myself, I'm not a very good, like, you know, talker, which I feel like kind of my curse, because I can't really explain fully the way I want to. So that's why I draw my events and I paint and I try to communicate through my drawings and paintings. I had to get up and get some courage and tell my story and get. And I think these things are very, very real.
Here, first of all, credit where credit's due. 5 years is awesome, man.
Thank you. Thank you, Nick. Seriously, thank you.
And the next 5 years, no problem.
Yes. Yes.
It is tough.
It is.
You know, and I think a lot of times when, especially when surrounding drug or alcohol addiction, you know, you can get into a dark place, you know, and I think you can attract a certain darkness, you know, yes. A certain energy. And I think that can certainly open up to things.
Yes.
In the case of the arm, I think, you know, by him being seen, you saw him and then you passed on the information to his partner.
Right.
So I think it helped you and I think it helped her.
Oh, that's interesting. Yes. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Didn't really think about that.
Tried, appeared before, and she's just never seen him. But you were there, you know, you were chilling out, you're building up, you're looking into your vape and stuff. And that was just the right time. So
that's actually pretty incredible that you brought that up. I didn't really think about it like that. Yeah. 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 Because she was saying the cabinets were opening. There was just certain things that were happening that she's saying that, you know, there was something going on with the motion light in the back. You know, she always had a sense that it was Jeff because that he passed away at the house. So she said right away. And then when this patient was doing these rituals, they, you know, I found out and they never know to this day if she found out somehow that Jeff has passed away and she thought this was a perfect opportunity to do such things in the house, knowing someone has passed away. That's what we came to the conclusion of. Because I asked her, I go, why would she do that? Like, you know, did she know? How did she, you know, and they never really figured that out. I appreciate it, Nick, man. It's awesome. It really helped me. This was a big deal. So I just want to thank you with all sincerity.
Thank you, Chris. I really appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you, Nick. Keep up the good work, Nick. I love the show.
Good stuff, man. All right. Take care, brother. That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter you would like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Chris for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next Sunday. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.